A brief history of the Holy Roman Empire. The angel pope and the devil. After the death of Nicholas IV, there was a vacancy in the papacy for over 2 years. The Orsini family wanted to regain control of the papacy, but the Colonna family did not wish to loose the controls they had under Nicholas. A stalemate was reached, which dragged on for years. A third party which entered into the fray was certain Benedict Gaetani, also known as Kitani. He was a corrupt man who not only slept with a mistress, but with her daughter as well. He desired the tiara, but was much disliked for his arrogance. For all his arrogance, and for all the enemies he'd made, he did have one decided advantage. He was shrewd and cunning. Realizing he could not be elected pope, he moved in the shadows. Historians debate on what role Gaetani, later known as Pope Boniface VIII, really had in the events to come, but he was certainly the beneficiary. After 2 years of bickering, a hermit named Peter, or Pierre, of Maronne was said to have sent a letter to the cardinals. The hermit had a reputation as an ascetic, a miracle healer, and a prophet. Like many hermits in his day, the generations before him, he had the aura of a John the Baptist. Like the popular vision of John, he was a scraggly little man whose devotion to God was doubted by none. He resided in a cell that was made in a cave atop a mountain. He was the antithesis of the papacy of years past, humble and poor. He had no possessions, was uneducated, naive in the ways of the world, and hadn't bathed for years. The letter said to have read that the church was without its leader and that if the cardinals didn't elect one soon, God's wrath would fall upon them. The letter was received by Benedict Gaetani. The cardinals now changed their plans. For years, the corruption of the papacy had been so apparent that the common man had long dreamed of an angel pope would one day arise and restore the papacy to the apostolic days. Here was a prophet, the hermit who beckoned the church back to those days. They unanimously elected Peter, although he didn't ask for it. Peter was a unique figure. He was a member of the Franciscan spirituals, who were later persecuted as heretics for their rejection of the Inquisition and their allegiance to Joachim Fiore. They were not really forerunners of the revolution, but they were strongly ascetic and hearkened back to the days of church in poverty. They resisted many of the changes that occurred in the church and broke away from the mainstream Franciscans, who were by now the leaders of the Inquisition along with the Dominicans. In some ways, Peter looked like an angel pope. He refused to ride in the Rome adorned like a prince, but instead rode around on a donkey like Jesus. Unfortunately, for all of his virtues, he was uneducated, naive, and gullible. He was already over 80 years old and may well have suffered from what we now call Alzheimer's. He often made several appointments to the same office, having forgotten that the office had been filled by him days earlier. He was also, of course, easily to manipulate. He took the name Celestine V in July of 1294, but the control his advisors exercised over him was evident immediately. He moved to Naples, where Charles II resided, and his decisions were manipulated in most every way by the king. A treaty had been reached, James II of Aragon and Sicily, who agreed to relinquish Sicily, but his brother Frederick had been acting as a regent and refused to leave. Instead, he was proclaimed king and hailed by the Sicilians as the new Frederick. He had, at Charles' request, agreed to reinstate the old, age-old edict which allowed kings to reside over or protect the election process of a new pope. In fact, the new pope did little himself. He had Gaetani and others to run the daily offices of the pope while he retired to his cell to practice his ascetic lifestyle. The only acts he did on his own involved giving away the riches of the church to poor, which angered the cardinals to no end. It was at this time that he began to regret ever having taken the office at all. He is said to have proclaimed, quote, O God, while I rule over men's souls, I am losing the salvation of my own, end of quote. Indeed, he came to believe that demons had a role in his election, and he feared for his very soul. Voices were said to call out to him, beseeching him to resign his office. It was Gaetani who advised Celestine that it was proper to step down, and voluntarily abdicated the throne. On December the 13th, 1294, Celestine became the first pope to voluntarily abdicate the throne. His reasons were outlined as follows, quote, of his humbleness, the quest of a better life, and the easy conscience, an account of his frailty of body and want of knowledge, the badness of men, and a desire to return to the quietness of his former state. End of quote. Within 2 weeks' time, Gaetani was the new pope under the name of Boniface VIII. But as for Celestine, he never attained his dream of returning to his former estate. Boniface could not allow Celestine to roam around freely, so Celestine was confined to a cell and kept under guard. Some historians maintain he was not treated poorly, but he tried to escape only once to be captured cannot be denied. Moreover, he died 2 years later, mostly by starvation. To his successor, Boniface, Celestine is said to have uttered this prophecy, quote, "You leap to the throne like a fox, you will reign like a lion, and you will die like a dog," end of quote. So this has been a strange section. We've had Innocent III's papacy, which reached its height, imperial office, which forever damaged the papacy. The decline of the imperial dignity took nearly half a century. The decline of the papal office would not take nearly as long. On the heels of Innocent's victory, Boniface VIII arose, at one time claiming to be both emperor and pope. The fact is that people, however apathetic they might be, were led around on a leash, as often depicted by filmmakers and others. The people came to despise the papacy more and more. The rise of Boniface signaled the beginning of the decline of the papacy. Rudolf's reign had brought a semblance of sanity back to Germany, that there wasn't even a glimmer of restoring the emperor's office to the ancient universal sovereign. He remained a sovereign in name, and the other kings of Europe paid him homage, but they did as they pleased. The emperors of Rome were thereafter largely German kings with vassals among the weaker states. The kings of Bohemia, Hungary, Poland, and other states continued to bow to him, while the kings of France and England sometimes sought to usurp the dignity for themselves. Throughout these coming times, of the office of the emperor were never forgotten, but it was a fading shadow of a former glory. The real power resided in the papacy, which even now was beginning to crumble. Pope Celestine was a prophetic image of the church itself. He was proof that the church was not ready to return to apostolic poverty or surrender its power. The corrupt now ruled in place of the righteous, and there was no one who could reform it. That would one day be the lesson of the Reformation. If the church could not be reformed, it must be abandoned. So we'll be heading into a new section of the Holy Roman Empire saga, the reign of Pope Boniface. And of course, we have to look forward to his end, since he's going to die like a dog. Now, the sources for this is Religion and the Holy Roman Empire by Ferguson, Before France and Germany by Gary, The Oxford History of Medieval Europe by Holmes, The Papal Encyclopedia by Bunsen, The Capetian Kings of France, 987 to 1328 by Butler and Adams, French History, Volume 1 by Guizot, Barbarian Invasions by Delbruck, Early Germans by Todd, and The Rise and Fall of the Holy Roman Empire by Criswell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.